Draft guru Sean Sullivan is back with another edition of Best in Class, running you through the NFL, looking at the performances of rookies all over the league and young players. And of course, Sean weighs in on his beloved Bucks. It's all presented by Bill Curry Ford. Here's Sean.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Best in Class with Sean Sullivan, coming to you live from Bill Curry Ford Studios in the greatest city in the world, Tampa, Florida. We are 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium, and we are a 65-year-old, fourth-generation now business serving the Tampa Bay community. And we have a brand new facility opening in about a week called the Ford Pro Elite to service all of your heavy-duty fleet and fleet services. So if you own a business right now and you're like, every time I go to service, I have to be in with all the soccer moms and everyone else getting an oil change. Listen, we need those people to help maintain our business. We need the retail business. But I understand, as a fleet customer, you have a business. You have 10 vehicles that are on the road every day serving the community. Don't worry. We built a separate facility just for you. You are not going to be mixed with retail anymore. You are absolutely just with fleet. We have time limits on everything that we're doing right now. We're going to get your vehicle back on the road for your routes, for your deliveries, for whatever you're using your vehicles for. You have your own service department now, and it's called the Ford Pro Elite, and you can find it online, and you can, and it also has mobile. So not only do we do free mobile services, so we're not charging you for the mobile. So right now, we've been doing that for retail. Now, on the fleet side, we're going to be able to do businesses. So let's just say you have 10 vehicles that at 8 in the morning go out and do work. It's okay, because we'll come at 7 in the morning and change all the oil so that your vehicles never have to miss any time on the road right now. It's a fantastic service, and I can't wait for all the businesses in Tampa to get involved. I couldn't believe the number. 7,000 businesses in the city of Tampa, in our PMA, 7,000 businesses have 10 or more Ford vehicles in their fleet. That is an incredible number. And thank you so much for the support for Ford Motor Company and for Bill Curry Ford. We have a lot of stuff going on. It's the end of the year. Right now, you could take advantage of the no sales tax. So if you're using your business for 51%, if you're using your vehicle for business, at least at 51%, you can write off the interest of all of your loans with now the big, beautiful bill is taking care of that for businesses. Okay, so right now we have so many things going on for the end of the year, including the 0-0-0. Obviously, zero interest is a big topic right now. The rates were just lowered by the Fed. We had inflation now at 2.7%, the lowest it's been in over three decades. So there's a lot going on right now in the economy. There's a lot of deals going on. We have a bunch of 2025 vehicles that need to be launched out of here. We have deals starting at $10,000 below MSRP for the end of the year, especially on F-Series. We are moving out, ready for 2026. So visit BillCurryFord.com so you have all of our amazing specials. Follow us at all of the social media sites, Bill Curry Ford Tampa, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, I've done my job. Let's get into football, okay? So I was going to start with obviously the Falcons game, but I really feel like we need to discuss the New Orleans game first, and then we'll walk into the Atlanta game, and then we'll go through the week in the NFL. So I don't know about anybody else, but my first impression of the New Orleans game was when I saw Tyler Shuck run 31 yards into the end zone for a touchdown. On a team, by the way, that was scoring 13 points a game prior to the Buccaneers game, I was looking at it going, that's Hill. I never for once thought that that was Tyler Shuck, who is basically the modern-day Mike Glennon. I never thought that that could be him. So I'm watching the television, and I'm taking notes, and I see the touchdown, and I'm like, okay, Jason Hill, I'm writing in there, like, Jason Hill just murders the Bucs. Every time we play him, it seems like this guy makes his money on the Bucs. And then they go, Tyler Shuck with the touchdown, and I'm like, no way. There's no way that this guy just ran 30 yards for a touchdown. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I'm still now 2 weeks removed trying to figure this out. Where the hell were the linebackers? Where was the safeties? Like, you let Mike Glennon run up the sideline, right, for 30 yards and a touchdown. The guy had two rushing touchdowns on the game, and he hasn't had any rushing touchdowns in his career. I don't understand it. I talked about the fact that Todd Bowles should be releasing the defense right now. You know, I was so upset after that game that I was like, I just don't want to do a podcast. I was emotional and upset, and I'm like, you guys don't need another person just screaming and yelling about the team, right? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's give it a few days. I gave it a few days. Then I had to leave town for business. Then I came back, and I was just like, you know what? I just can't do the podcast for this week. I can't do it. I can't wrap my head around it. I was so dumbfounded by that New Orleans game that I just couldn't believe how poorly New Orleans is as a team, how they have nobody playing for their team, and they beat us. And the fact that they screwed up their draft position is the only good part of this entire process. I'm thinking to myself, okay, New Orleans has absolutely destroyed their draft position the last 2 weeks. And, you know, it makes perfect sense because the Bucks did it for 14 seasons where we would be out of the playoffs, and when for some reason we would win our last two games every year when the other teams were smart enough to lay down. And for draft position, we would always end up with 5 wins, and that 5 wins would take us to out of the top 10, usually in the draft. The stupidity of what New Orleans did, they should have been closer to what the Cardinals did. When the Cardinals, for all those conspiracy theories out there, listen, the Cardinals' play calling on that last drive 100% was to tank. If you guys think for a second that they had no timeouts and they didn't tell their receivers and running backs, please run to the sideline, don't try to get extra yards, and they literally ran the clock out, it's probably the worst play calling I've ever seen. And now, remember, during the game, their offense was moving against us. They actually knew effectively what to do. I think they purposely didn't win that game. That's my opinion for those conspiracy theorists. If you go back and just look at the series of 4 plays in a row when they got the ball back and they could have won the game, they literally did nothing. And it wasn't because Todd Bowles screamed at the defense. It was watch the play calls. Go back and just look at the play call. The play calls were awful. And I'm looking at this New Orleans game and I'm going, okay, there's no way that New Orleans is going to want to win this game. It absolutely hurts them. They need too many pieces. They need for this team to get beat by New Orleans is beyond embarrassing. That team has nothing, right? So then somehow we let them hang around, and then they won, and then they win the next week. It just makes no sense to me what they're doing. But again, it's New Orleans, so I hope they draft every worst player in the NFL draft, and I hope they never sport a good team, and I hope that the NFL has to retract their team because they're so bad. I can't stand New Orleans. Terrible city, terrible people, terrible team. Anyway, so getting to the Atlanta game. So we lost this Atlanta game 29-28. Everybody saw what happened. The defense, again, the Bucks scored 28 points. There's no excuse to lose a game if the Bucks can score 4 touchdowns. There's just no excuse. A backup quarterback, Kirk Cousins, he's absolutely terrible the 2 weeks prior that I watched. So I'm watching him. I watch every game. I watch every snap of every game. He's absolutely shell-shocked, dances in the pocket, inaccurate, can't hit the broadside of a barn, throws interceptions, and then I watch him against the Bucks, and he looks like Joe Montana. Stands in one spot, doesn't move, never worries about getting hit, delivers the ball on time with accuracy. I'm just watching. I watched Pitts, you know, destroy us in the first half, and watched Todd Bowles make 0 adjustments until halftime after a lot of the damage was done. Where you put a linebacker, you drop a linebacker shallow flat, and then you put a safety over top, and that stops the tight end. And then because they didn't have Drake London, you're forced to throw to a West Virginia converted quarterback, converted to wide receiver, that you'll never, ever hear from again. Destroy us. David Sills was a quarterback in college. He is a converted wide receiver. 6 catches, 78 yards. 6 catches, 78 yards. Bijan, 8 catches, 82 yards. Again, that's off-the-ball linebackers that can't play. We have no off-the-ball linebackers. They can't play anymore, right? Kyle Pitts, 11 receptions, 166 yards, and 3 TDs. Do you know what's interesting about Kyle Pitts' 3 TDs? Because that's what he averages per 18 games. Or, I'm sorry, now 17 games. The last three seasons, the 17-game seasons, he's averaged 3 touchdowns for the entire season. He had a hat trick in one game because we can't figure out how to double team and take away the short and the long of the throws. And it boggles my mind that you can have a veteran like Todd Bowles. And I don't care. I literally heard a press conference where he said it's on the players. We can't really coach anymore. Like, we've coached them, and this is all we can do, and they're not listening to us anymore. When the coach says the players aren't listening to me, you have to be let go. And I listen, Todd Bowles is an outstanding human being. Let's make no mistake. This is a pillar of the Tampa community, a strong Christian man, a strong leader of men, raising terrific children in our community. His son went to Jesuit. We're talking about a terrific human being who probably just needs to retire and enjoy what, because he's given his life to football. But what we're watching right now, it can't be good for him physically, and it can't be good for him mentally, watching what's happening. He's lost a team. I think it's obvious, and it's rough to watch. It really is. Now, we're going to get healthy, and if we don't win when we're healthy, it's going to be hard for him to keep his job. If we beat Carolina this week and Miami's laying down, Miami's starting Ewers over Zach Wilson, so they're starting their third quarterback on the roster. They skipped their backup on purpose because they want to lose that game for draft position. So basically, and then we go back into Carolina. So we have a chance to finish our season with 10 wins. There's no excuse. Carolina's not a good football team. I don't care what anybody says. Their quarterback's not good. They have some wide receivers. They have an okay running game. Their offensive line has injuries, and their defense is one of the worst in the NFL. There's really nothing to discuss. Oh, but Sean, I don't care. Stop. Just stop. They have no pass rush. They have one of the worst pass rushers in the NFL. So there's no excuses. Getting back to the Falcons game, I have to say this. So we have a quarterback that's 6 foot tall. He's short for NFL standards. And one of the biggest keys, and I talked to a former Buccaneer, and a very, very famous former Buccaneer at a charity dinner. And basically, we talked about Drew Brees, because obviously, you know, it's hard to talk to them about football that's going on now, because you don't want them to say anything about the team or the players or what's going on, because these are current, you know, things. So what we do is usually when you talk about, you know, Drew Brees, or you talk about like the who they played and who their favorite quarterback was. One of the things we talked about was how Drew Brees countered his height by having interior protection. So the New Orleans Saints were successful because their center and two guards were the highest paid in football, and they kind of didn't really care about their tackles because of Drew Brees. Drew Brees cannot get interior pressure because he can't see. So you're throwing into lanes kind of blind. Your anticipatory throws, kind of like what Baker does, where he throws the ball so far in advance because he has to. We're getting so much interior pressure right now that it's making Baker Mayfield play terrible, and it's the same thing that would have made Drew Brees not a Hall of Famer. You have to figure out how to get the center position fixed with the Buccaneers. Barton is absolutely playing very, very poor. And it could be because of the guards, whatever. It doesn't change the fact that he's playing bad. The excuse is the excuse. Whether it's valid or not is not for me to say. What I can tell you is on film, watching the game, he's terrible. He's not holding double teams. He's getting blown off the ball. He's getting pushed backwards. This is a big, strong kid who has a terrific pedigree and great technique. There's no excuse for this. There's zero excuse. When you have two guards that are absolute backups in the NFL are not playing well. So the interior of this offensive line is destroying the Bucs offense. Now, for those of you people who wrote text messages and emails about how Baker Mayfield shouldn't get this big deal because he's not playing as a franchise quarterback, I'm going to give you a couple of pointers on this. First of all, Baker Mayfield has an oblique injury, a shoulder separation, and he has a gash on his throwing hand that they're putting super glue in prior to the game, like dabbing super glue, because it's the size of a half dollar on the top of his hand, right? And that's the hand that he grips the football with. So this guy is so tough, separated shoulder, oblique injury, dropping super glue into his hand. If I could get 11 more Baker Mayfields, right, on the team, I don't care if they're 6 foot, 150 pounds, give them to me. This guy is, I'm so tired of people bashing Baker Mayfield. The guy plays hurt. Now, if you want to talk to me about why is he playing, all right, that's a conversation. Why don't we have a backup quarterback that can step in and win a game for us? Absolutely a valid question. Baker Mayfield should not be playing through these major injuries. These are injuries that would make mortal men not want to play, right? You guys have to understand, these are serious injuries. And yes, his timing is off. And yes, he's rushed in the pocket. And yes, he's tap dancing. And yes, he's throwing the ball extremely hard right now. I feel like he's really trying to will this team to, because he feels like there's a personal responsibility. Listen, this guy cares. I watched this game. I've rewatched the Atlanta Falcons game. I see guys jogging around. I see guys not giving the effort. I see guys not being where they're supposed to be. It's ridiculous. I mean, if you guys are seeing great effort, you guys are watching a different football team. There's no effort on special teams. There's zero concentration. Oh my gosh. When Todd Bowles came out and he literally said, McCollum is bored while he's playing corner in the NFL making $45 million. And then he said he's anxious and bored on the special teams where he gave up 7 points. Why is he out there? I don't blame McCollum. Don't blame McCollum. Blame the coaching staff. He shouldn't be out there. If you're saying that this guy's bored and he's having problems with cadence and he's having problems sitting still, then get him out of the game, right? Then it annoys me when we're blaming a player that should be on the sideline. If he's bored, he wouldn't be starting for me. I can tell you that right now. And I don't care, you know, if you guys want to call me a car guy, you want to call me an amateur or whatever. If you don't agree with me, then you don't know anything about football. If a guy says I'm losing concentration while I'm playing football in the National Football League making $45 million, you have a problem. This is not something that you say we're working through. You have a serious problem. And he sits on the bench until that problem is resolved. Period. Then when he gets hurt in the game, Vidal comes in. And then on the 4th and 14, I listened to this podcast, the Joe Bucks podcast, which is the number one podcast for NFL football, number one podcast for the Bucks in the nation, right? Second to none. I'm listening to the podcast. I'm listening to Ira and Steve disagree on whose fault it was. Well, guess what? I'm going to be the referee in this, and I'm going to come out and tell you that I talked to some Buccaneers, some friends of mine, who, by the way, are very famous players for the Buccaneers, and I know whose fault it is. It's both of their fault. Vidal, is his entire job and is flat support if Bijan got a rollout on a throw, and then he's supposed to backpedal to the sticks, keep the receiver in front of him, and make the throw stay short of the sticks, and then he's supposed to make the tackle. That's how that defense is work. Now, at no point is the receiver supposed to run by Vidal and put Vidal in a trail position. There's supposed to be a safety over the top if the throw goes past the sticks, which is where Antoine Winfield was 14 yards away from the play. Okay? So we can say, Antoine, why are you so far back when it's a 4th and 14 and you need to play up? You need to give support in case Vidal's beat off the line. And guess what happened? He got beat off the line. Vidal didn't set far enough back to the sticks. He stopped in front of the sticks, allowed the throw to go over his head, allowed the receiver to get past him, so he got into a trail position, and then he allowed, and then Winfield was 14 yards off, wasn't close enough to be able to make a play. So, Todd Bowles scheme, yes. Players, yes. Right? It's a disaster. Okay? That whole thing is a disaster. Everything I just described to you is ridiculous. How are the Bucs practicing a 2-minute drill in defense? Are they really practicing a 2-minute drill? Are they practicing enough? Are they working through these drills? Are they understanding, hey, if this happens, this is what we do. If this happens, this is what we do. I sure don't see a lot of that going on in our games. It's almost like we've never been in these situations before, so let's just wing it, because that's sure what it looks like. Disciplined football teams don't get run on repeatedly when they're supposedly a run defense. And then when you're ranked 30th, which was, by the way, is surprising because we should be 32nd. I don't know how we're not 32nd, but when you continue to allow the wide receivers to get in front of you in these soft zones, when you're playing soft zone and you're allowing this big cushion and they're allowing them catch and then you're supposed to make the tackle, one, the Bucs defenders are not good tacklers. if I'm designing a scheme where tackling is super important, I probably wouldn't have this personnel because these people can't tackle at all. They're arm tackling up by the shoulders. They're not they dive straight into the grass. They're not gang tackling. And we can talk about that being effort, but it's the scheme. The scheme doesn't make any sense to me because when they're throwing the ball to a receiver, the receiver on the other team is running wide open with our defender in trail position. Every single time we're in trail position. When on offense, when Baker's throwing the ball to a receiver like Kate Otten, right, there's a defensive back literally on his back or in his lane, right? Watch Emeka, watch even Mike Evans. Watch how they get in front, and guess what? They don't trail. They backpedal. They keep the receiver in front of them. They keep the ball in front of them so they can make a play, just like the Atlanta player did when Baker threw to Mike Evans. And that was an anticipatory throw. And I didn't even like the route when Tez Johnson brought another defender right into the flat where there were two Atlanta Falcons guarding the flat, where it's so easy for him to break off and intercept the ball going to Mike Evans, who was on a stop and curl on that play. So you don't bring a second defender into a stop and curl unless Mike ran the wrong route, which I don't believe he did. I believe that absolute wide receiver screen, that whole design was terrible. So I'm done. I'm done. Okay, so let me get to the rookies, and then we'll go on. So loved having Mike Evans back. 6 catches, 132 yards. I love the guy. He makes such a difference. Emeka Abuka, 4 catches, 64 yards. Looks much better in his role as a third wide receiver behind Godwin. McMillan being back is just a wonderful deal. So Evans, Emeka, McMillan, Godwin, Irving is a pretty amazing wide receiver room with backups like Shepard and Tez Johnson. That's pretty good. Delvin Culp, who we talked to out of Washington, had a touchdown. He's not getting enough playing time. We've talked about that. You guys all know how I feel about the wide receiver with Kate Otten saying, please stop trying to make fetch happen. You guys understand that completely. Running game-wise, Bucky Irving has not been as explosive as Rashard White and Sean Tucker, but still gets the lion's share of the carries. I'm not quite sure. I still don't understand that. To me, it appears Bucky is still injured. And I don't know why no one's talking about the fact that during the New Orleans game, he's on the sideline with his legs being worked on and his ankle being worked on, and it looked like he was going to be out for multiple games, and then he comes back in the game, and then he started again. So obviously there's something going on there. Defensively, there's just nothing I want to talk about defensively. I'm just gonna go on to the next game. So I guess we could talk about James Pierce Jr. This is a guy I was very high on. I talked about him with Joe Buck's fan when we did our draft podcast. I talked about him when I did my edge breakdown. I said, this is a difference maker. This guy is amazing. He had 2 sacks in the game. He has 8.5 sacks as a rookie. He had 2 more QB hits. He has 4 tackles for loss. He is a disruptor. The last 3 games, he has 5 sacks in his last 3 games. The guy's going to get to double-digit sacks, guys, as a rookie. That's very difficult to do. That's James Pierce Jr. out of Tennessee, a guy I was very high on. And yes, I am tooting my own horn on this because I'm tired of not being listened to. I don't care if this guy is knocks ice cream off of little girls' cones, at Busch Gardens. I don't really care. Okay, I don't care. That's not a thing for me. The guy, I don't care about the locker room because James Pierce Jr. looks like he's out for blood when he's on the field. So at some point, we've got to have some of these wreckers like T.J. Watt, super nice guy. I get it. He's not the normal, right? Hutchinson, not the normal. It's more like guys like like James Pierce Jr. and of course, the number one guy for the Browns, who's probably not a very nice guy, who's probably going to break the sack record this year. Again, Emeka, we talked about. Xavier Watts out of Notre Dame had 9 total tackles for the Falcons. Jalen Walker out of Georgia, outside linebacker, had several pressures on the game. Again, Atlanta went all in getting Jalen Walker and James Pierce to change that defensive round. And really, their offense was the problem this year, but just not against the Bucs. Moving on to the Browns and Bears. The Bears dominated with my boy Caleb Williams, 31-3. Caleb, 17 of 28, 242, two TDs. Right now he's playing the best football of his career. He's absolutely killing it right now. The Bears found their franchise. It looks like he's getting more and more comfortable in Ben Johnson. Again, this is a guy who's had three offensive coordinators since he's been drafted, but it looks like he's coming into it. You guys are seeing some special arm throws. You guys are seeing his arm strength in the Windy City. He's going to be awesome. I can't wait to see the game this week against the Packers. Luther Burden out of Louisville. This is a guy that was should have been a first-round draft pick. I think he's really coming into his own. He had an ankle injury in this game, but he had a couple of catches. Isaiah Bond for the Browns had 89 receiving yards on just two catches, playing with Shedeur Sanders, who had a very bad game. He threw three interceptions, but he was sacked six times. I mean, that offensive line for the Cleveland Browns is absolute hot garbage. Carson Switzinger out of UCLA, the linebacker, off-the-ball linebacker. Absolutely love this guy in my linebacker breakdown, if you guys want to go back and listen to it. 14 total tackles. This guy is the machine. I absolutely love him. He was born to be a Brown. Congratulations on that. Quentin Junkins, the running back out of Ohio State for the Browns, didn't really have a terrific game. Kyle Managu, whatever we want to call him, from the Bears, out of Rutgers, tough runner, also didn't have a very strong game, but he really didn't need to be there. But those are two guys to keep an eye on. Ravens and Bengals, Ravens 24-0 over the Bengals. The Bengals played like they had nothing they didn't really care. King Henry had 11 carries for 100 yards. Jamar Chase did his thing, 132 yards. Burrow had two interceptions on the game, which is pretty tough. But here's the thing about the Bengals. They drafted this Demetrius Knight Jr. This was a guy on the Bucs radar. We talked about him endlessly before the draft because I thought he would fit perfect as the off-the-ball linebacker next to Levante this year because I didn't think Lavoisier Dennis was going to be the guy. He had five tackles in the game. He had two sacks. He's been playing at a Pro Bowl level for the Bengals as a rookie. There's a guy to keep an eye on. And the Ravens had Teddy Buchanan, another linebacker they drafted, had a tackle in the game. And then Mike Green had a sack in the game out of Marshall. He was the Ravens defensive end that they drafted that was the star of the Senior Bowl. He's starting to play a little bit better. I can see that there's a learning curve there, but I think he's going on 4.5 sacks for the season. Chargers and Chiefs. Chargers eliminated the Chiefs from the playoffs. Sorry, Ira. 16-13. My boy Justin had 19-29, 210, and a TD. Omar Hampton, the running back, first-round draft pick, had 61 rushing yards. He had 53 in the second half. Orondo Gadsden, the second, the Chargers tight end, second round, had 61 receiving yards. Ashton Gillette, the second round, a defensive lineman, had a half-sack and interception for the Chiefs. And Trey Harris, wide receiver in the second round, 37 receiving yards. Moving on to the Bills and Pats. Bills won this game 35-31. Josh Allen did his magic. Trayvon Henderson, the Ohio State running back, who I, if you go back and listen to the podcast, had rated higher than Judkins for the Browns because I said this guy has home run potential. I was all over this guy. For whatever reason, at the beginning of the season, the Pats just wouldn't give him the ball. They wanted to do this let's share carries thing. I don't ever understand it. They did the same thing in this game where they shared carries. And then on the second half, he only had 14 carries for 148 yards and two TDs. He had two TD runs of 52 yards and 65 yards. This guy is a star. I don't know how to help the Patriots. They have a good coaching staff. But if I could shoot them an email and say, wake up, stupid. Maybe you should give Trayvon Henderson 20 carries a game if he's going to put runs of 52 and 65-yard TDs. You saw what he did against the Buccaneers. You saw what he did the next week. The guy's a superstar, and you guys keep him on the bench, and you're having him share carries. Wake up, okay? The guy had two more TDs in the game. The guy could have been your offensive rookie of the year shoo-in if he had played all season. Drake May, last year's first-round draft pick with Caleb Williams, continued his a good season. This wasn't a great game for him, but he had two rushing TDs. But the guy's played at an elite level all year. Jackson Hall's the tight end that I really liked. It was a late-round guy. Had another touchdown catch for Josh Allen. Will Campbell, the first-round left tackle, got injured in the game. Obviously, didn't play. Kyle Williams, out of Arizona, the wide receiver for the Pats, had one reception, 16 yards. So, again, Trayvon Henderson's a superstar. Let him play. Enough with the sharing carries. Commanders and Giants, what a terrible game to watch. But 29-21, Commanders. They won four games on the season. Abdul Carter had his best game as a Giant, who was picked number three. He's had the immaturity issues going on. He was allegedly watching pornography in a team meeting and got kicked out. Who knows if that's true? I don't know. Those are just rumors, but he did get kicked out of the meeting. 7 total tackles, 1 sack, 2 forced fumbles, 1 forced fumble recovery, and 2 tackles for loss. Again, 7 tackles, a sack, 2 forced fumbles. He recovered one of those forced fumbles and had 2 more tackles for loss. This guy is an amazing player. Just needs to get his head on straight. Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, the running back for the Commanders, who was a free agent, 18 carries, 96 yards, and a touchdown. That's his best game since week 6. Jalen Lane, 4th round draft pick, a wide receiver for the Commanders, had a 63-yard punt return TD, and he had another reception. Jackson Dart, the new princess of the Giants, QB, 20 of 36, 246, 2 touchdowns, rushed for another touchdown. Obviously, the Giants found their QB. This guy's a stud. And then, of course, we missed Scataboo. Scataboo was one of my favorite running backs. We talked about it. He had a tremendous career going for the Giants and had a terrible ankle injury. And then last year's 5th round pick, Tyrone Tracy, has been filling in for him, had 70 rushing yards and a TD. Eagles blew the Raiders out 31-0. This could be Pete Carroll's single year as the head coach of the Raiders. The Raiders need a lot, guys. They need to figure out their quarterback position. Their quarterback's over 30 years old, and he's not playing very well. I don't think they're going to be in the Mendoza sweepstakes. I don't think they might have a chance at possibly the Oregon QB if he does come out. Not quite sure what the Raiders are going to do, but they need a quarterback. They have a running back in Ashon Gentry, though. He was their first-round pick, 9 carries, 35 yards. He's a weapon. He's going to be a weapon. My favorite player from the previous draft who was a non-quarterback was Brock Bowers. He was last year's first-round draft pick, 6 receptions, 27 yards, still holds the rookie record for all-time tight ends in the history of the NFL. Darian Porter is a guy that I discussed. I interviewed at the Combine. I talked to him about Jason Light to see if the Bucs had any interest because he's a sub-4'3", tall, lanky corner who also can play some safety. Was drafted in the 3rd round by the Raiders, and he had 6 tackles and 2 pass deflections, which is really good. And then there's an offensive lineman, Caleb Rogers, 3rd round pick of the Raiders. He started at left tackle and had a terrific game. Jets, Jaguars with Liam Cohen, won 48-20. By the way, the Jaguars' record is 10-4, and the Bucs' record is 7-7. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? He's got Trevor Lawrence playing well. Trevor Lawrence had 5 touchdowns in this game. Very impressive for Trevor Lawrence, who's been struggling since he's been in the NFL. My boy Travis Etienne Jr. had 3 touchdowns. What a terrific young man that guy is out of Clemson. Bashul Tootin, the Jaguars running back, 4th-round draft pick, had run reception for 16 yards, but he did have a touchdown in the game. Adonai Mitchell was a wide receiver for the Jets. Last year's they traded for him in the Sauce Gardner trade. He had 7 receptions, 69 yards, and a TD. The last 3 weeks, he has been unbelievable for the Jets. The Jets might have found something with this young 22-year-old pairing him with Garrett Wilson next year. We'll see. But my goodness, is he playing well. Brady Cook, undrafted rookie free agent for the Jets, was 23 of 33, 176, and a TD. He had 3 interceptions, but that was Brady Cook. I liked seeing his parents really, really happy when he had his first touchdown throw. That was really awesome. But the Jets are a bad team, Brady. Don't get too down. Texans and Cardinals. Texans won 40-20. The Texans improved to 9-5. They're going to make the playoffs. C.J. Stroud had 3 touchdowns, which was terrific. Jahar Jordan, the Texans' 6th-round running back last year, had 15 carries, 101 rushing yards, 2 catches for 14 yards. That was unbelievable. Walter Nolan III, the defensive tackle, the 16th pick in the draft, a guy that I wanted the Bucs to draft. I was all over him. I just think he's such a difference maker when he's in the game. Was hurt most of the year. Has been absolutely on a torrid pace. 3 tackles, another sack, another forced fumble, another pass defensed, and 2 QB hits in this game for Walter Nolan. The guy can play, and he's got an attitude problem. I love both of those things. Woody Marks, the Texans running back, did not have a good game, but he did have a TD, but he did get injured in the game. Will Johnson, the Cardinals' first-round draft pick at corner, Actually, I apologize. He was a second-round draft pick, started and played significant snaps at 47. And then Jordan Burch, the offside linebacker, third-round pick, played 37 plays and had a sack in the game. Packers, Broncos. Broncos, 34. Packers, 26. My boy, Bo Nix. I got a text message from Todd Wright. And normally I wouldn't call him out to the text message, but he texts me. He says, "Hey, you know, you were really high on this Bo Nix guy, and I just don't see what you're seeing in him." And I'm thinking, okay, well, I said, Todd, the Broncos are 12-2. They're 7-0 at home while he's their starting quarterback, and he's passed for 300 yards and 4 more TDs. So I know that Todd Wright has the same exact impression of Bo Nix as every other person that watches a football player play without being spectacular, but he's just a steady, solid NFL quarterback who makes good decisions, right? And I know that he's not the show guy. He's not going to show you like these spectacular plays. But again, 23 of 34, 302 yards and 4 TDs in this game, and beat the Packers in Lambeau, right? Just unbelievable. The Broncos are going to the playoffs for the second year that he's been their quarterback. So the Broncos have been to the playoffs now in 2 consecutive years with Bo Nix as the quarterback. If you look at his overall statistics, he's above the middle of the pack for last year's out of the top 6 QBs that were drafted. So, you know, Caleb is going to the playoffs. Jaden's been hurt all year. That's really hard. Penix is hurt, which is hard. But Bo Nix is going to the playoffs, you know, which is terrific. And again, McCarthy has been hurt. So, again, these guys have got to stay healthy, and you're going to see them perform at a high level. And then, of course, Drake May is also going to the playoffs, and he actually might go to the Super Bowl. So what an interesting pairing to see if we get to see Bo Nix play against Drake May in the playoffs. That would be a really interesting thing. Again, I told everyone, right, last year's quarterback draft is going to eclipse 1983. It's going to eclipse it because Caleb, Drake, Bo, Jaden, Penix, McCarthy, these guys are going to win Super Bowls. These guys are going to win teams. I don't know which ones. I'm not saying that they're going to win this year, but I can tell you right now, I have a good chance with 3 of them going deep in the playoffs this year to start winning championships. But we'll see. Again, that's just me talking, but I definitely love the quarterback class. Now, here's somebody that I was very interested in out of UCF. I talked to Steve about him and RJ Harvey. I said, this is a guy to watch. Second-round draft pick, pick 60, had 19 carries, 64 yards, and a touchdown. He has been terrific for the Broncos. Matthew Golden, out of Texas, wide receiver, first-round draft pick of the Packers, 3 receptions, 55 yards. We talked about Bo Nix already as a second-year player. Jade Barron, they're started for the Broncos on that top defense. And Edrin Cooper is a second-year player, had a fumble recovery for the Packers. He was a linebacker. So Jade Barron's played extremely well. We talked about Bo Nix, but I'm so happy for RJ Harvey. Lions, Rams. Rams won 41-34. The Rams are now 11-3. The Rams defensive tackle, Kobe Turner, their third round pick in 2023. So I guess that's a little bit more older than I normally go, but I'm pointing it out because I just think that the way he's playing, coming as a third round draft pick, being a dominant force, pass rushing, he had 2 more QB hits, 2 more sacks, 5 tackles for loss. Here's a guy, again, a third-round draft pick who's starting for the Rams, who are 11-3, who's just influencing the defensive line. Blake Corum out of Michigan, who's been hurt, had 11 carries, 71 yards, and a TD. He's a second-year player. Tyleek Williams, this year's defensive tackle for the Lions, is starting for the Lions, so I hope to be able to talk about him. And Tate Ratledge, the offensive guard, second round this year, is now a full-time starter on the offensive line. Panthers, Saints. The Saints are now 4-10. The Idiots have won 2 games in a row to take them out of the top 2 draft picks. Again, Tyler Shuck had 272 yards and a TD. I don't see him being the future of the New Orleans Saints quarterback, but I hope he is because I hope they lose every game. But I don't see him being a franchise quarterback. He was their second-round pick, pick 40 overall. I don't know what to say about him. I think he's a decent guy. He got drafted by a terrible team. I liked his draft profile, but I never saw him as a top-tier starting quarterback in the NFL. But, you know, we'll see. I think he's an average starter. I mean, a below-average starter. I apologize. Not an average starter. Titans and the 49ers. The 49ers won 37-24. Cam Ward, the number one overall pick, was 18 of 29 for 170 and two TDs. 101 passer rating, had his best game as a pro. Undrafted special teams player, Gunnar Helm for the Titans, had four receptions for 49 yards and a TD. Really, Upton Stout, the cornerback, third round, you know, got his first start because of injuries. Not really anything else I want to talk about there. Colts and Sea Chickens. Sea Chickens are now 11-3. Can't stand them. They won 18-16 over the Colts with the Phillip Rivers starting. Nick Manawari, the Seahawks safety, I absolutely love him. Six tackles, two tackles for loss, a sack, an interception, and one block field goal. I don't know what to say. He was all over my podcast. I told him that he's a physical player. The guy can play this position. He is amazing. He was a player I wanted on the Bucs roster. Again, in this one game, six tackles, two tackles for loss, a sack, interception, one blocked field goal. That's all he did in this game. Pretty cool. Timoloa for the Colts, defensive end, second-round pick, three total pressures. Jalen Travis, offensive tackle, starting at right tackle for the Colts. Riley Mills, defensive lineman, fifth-round draft pick, made his NFL debut. Vikings-Cowboys. Vikings won this game 34-26. J.J. McCarthy was in this game, playing in his second game back from injury, 15 of 24 for 250 yards and two TDs. He also had a rushing TD in the game. I think that's a pretty good game for him. Tyler Booker, this year's first-round draft pick of the Cowboys, has been excellent for the Cowboys on the offensive line. Ty Felton, out of Rutgers, third-round pick, 2025 for the Vikings, got some playing time for the first time. I'm interested about him to see how he goes, but there's not really much else on the Vikings and Cowboys to talk about. All right, so that wraps up Week 15 of the NFL. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please visit us at BillCurryFord.com. See all of our amazing specials, everything going on. I would really like the Bucs to win this week with a full offensive roster. We're going to have to win offensively. We're not going to win defensively. This is an offensive football team with a defensive head coach, and that's what we have to pay attention to. Is we are now an offensive team that has to outscore our opponents to win. And we've got to stop the interior pressure on Baker Mayfield, or we're not going to win. But the good news is Carolina does not have a very good pass rush. So it has one of the worst pass rushes in the league, actually. So that's a good thing. So we'll see. I'm sorry I went long-winded on this one. I had a lot to talk about. But I'll see you guys next week. You guys take care.